Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths and sometimes BYU coaches. That is the case today. My guest, so happy to have former BYU head basketball coach Dave Rose. Dave, always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So it's been about 5 years or so since you've been the head coach at BYU. Does it feel that long? Or does it feel like it was just yesterday?
Well, it depends. You know, in some ways it feels like, that's what I did for so long, and it just seems like, it was just yesterday. But in other ways, I've had a lot of things happen to me in the last 5 years, and so it seems like it's been a long time. But it's good to be back.
Yeah, we're going to get into a lot of that, but I do want to ask what your current situation is. You guys are up here in the Utah County area quite a bit. You have family here, and obviously, you know, you've been here for so long, you're up here a lot. But you live in St. George. You moved down to St. George a couple of years ago. Why'd you choose to retire in St. George?
Yeah, well, you know, that's where Cheryl and I met years and years ago. We met when we were both students at Dixie College, which is now Utah Tech. But we lived there for 10 years when I coached there at Dixie. And a couple winters after I retired here in Provo were a lot longer than when you're coaching and you're traveling, you're back and forth. You don't notice it as much, but we enjoy the warmer weather, and so we made the move, and we really enjoy it there. We really like it.
The last time that I saw you and was able to say hello to you was at the Kevin Young introductory press conference. You were up here for that. What do you think of the hire of Kevin Young and the state of the program, kind of what it means for BYU basketball?
Well, I was so excited to just the fact that we were able to get a coach in BYU time, very short time. It's difficult to replace that position, and for us to be able to get a coach of Kevin's caliber and his experience, and I was just really, really excited. And I think a lot of Cougar fans are really excited. I think we'll all miss Coach Pope. He was obviously a very, very good coach and quite a personality, fun to be around. And but I think we're all looking forward to the new chapter. I think what made me probably the happiest was that we were basically able to keep that group together. We lost a few guys here and there, but to be able to keep the core guys from all bailing and running off, because nowadays the transfer portal changes everything. Back in our day, if a kid left, he had to sit out a year, and so you were able to keep them around a little bit tighter. But now it's you lose a coach, you can lose your whole team in a couple days.
I think I know how you will respond to this, but I do want to ask you. You are a major part of why BYU is in the Big 12. With what you did as the head coach, with the success that you had in putting the program where it was, how much satisfaction do you personally take that BYU is in the Big 12, knowing that you had a hand in it?
Well, I don't take much, but what I do believe is that we didn't mess things up, okay? I think BYU has been on this path for a long time. And I remember, I can't remember exactly what the year was, but it was, three, maybe 4 or 5 years before I retired. We came really close to getting into the Big 12, made a real push. And we had I think that video is still running around somewhere of that presentation that we put together to try to be attractive to the Big 12. And we got shut down. And I remember I got a call from Tom, the AD, the night before, and he was just so excited and thought, hey, just hang in there. It looks like something big's on the horizon, and then it didn't happen. But from that, I think that was kind of the initial part of maybe setting a stepping stone to actually get that to happen a few years later. And I'm just excited that it's now. I mean, when you think of the athletes that have played here and that are here now at BYU, that's what they've always wanted to compete at. They want to compete at that level. And what I really am happy for, because I'm kind of removed from the students and I'm removed from the student athletes, but I'm a fan. And as a fan, I'm really excited that, that's the league that we'll be participating in and competing in.
Moving away just for a second from BYU and that side of things, you were recently inducted into the Utah Sports Hall of Fame, and it's actually the second Hall of Fame that you've been inducted in. You're also part of the Dixie State Hall of Fame, which happened several years back. What do those types of accolades mean to you?
I just feel really, really thankful for the opportunities that I was given and then being able to surround myself with the people that made it happen for me. And I'm excited for that. I think the induction into the Utah State Hall of Fame, I mean, that was pretty humbling. And there've been a lot of great athletes, and that's up there at the up in Salt Lake, and have the chance to go through it and to look and follow all the stories of all the guys from Utah that have been inducted in the Hall of Fame. It's pretty amazing. I'm excited that was able to happen for me and my family.
When you started your coaching career, what were your aspirations? What was your goal when you started?
Well, I don't know. It might sound kind of silly, but when I decided I was going to coach, I was about a year from graduating from college. And so then we had that magical run at the University of Houston. We played for the national championship, and we lost in the championship game to North Carolina State. And then I was hired at Millard High School 2 months later. And probably right in that time, my mindset was to win a national championship at the Division I collegiate level. And I would imagine that most people thought I was maybe a little out of my mind, or didn't think that was actually a real possibility. And most of the time, if that's what you really want to do, guys, they stay in at the college level and maybe be a graduate assistant, work into maybe being an assistant coach and stay at that level. But for me, I wanted to find out if I actually wanted to be a coach, or I knew I wanted to be a coach, but if I was actually any good at it. Mm-hmm. And after you get the coaching job, if I actually liked being the coach in that whole setting. And that's why I left Houston, and I had 4 or 5 different opportunities to coach at different places at different levels. But Millard High School in Fillmore was the only head coaching job that I was offered. And that's why we started there. Because I wanted to be the head coach, and I wanted to take it all on and see what it felt like, and the discipline and the wins and the losses, the disappointment, the highs, the lows. And I wanted that to happen to me at a very young age. But I was 25 years old coming out of college. This is actually kind of old. You're already a few years behind. And so that's how it all started for me, is that I just wanted to find out – what did it feel like for me to be in that pressure cooker of the head coach at a school? And I can tell you this, you might think, it's just a little two-way school and a little teeny community in Fillmore, but there's as much pressure in that job as any job I ever had, because you're buying your groceries from your point guard's mom, and you're getting served in the restaurant by your point guard's sister, and so anyways, there was a lot of pressure. And we talk about the Utah BYU rivalry, and as good as it is, and I'm so excited that we get a chance to jump back into that. And but that Millard Delta rivalry, that was, you know, quite something. I learned pretty quick how important sports are to people here in the state of Utah.
So when you took that job, I'm going to assume you had opportunities, not as a head coach, but in the college ranks. Is that accurate? So did people think you were crazy for taking a high school job?
I was just, people just wondered what I wanted to do, you know, and there's a lot of coaches or a lot of players that want to be a high school coach, and that's what their aspirations are. But I had a chance to stay at Houston and be a graduate assistant and go through that route. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd been in school for 3 years as a married couple, Cheryl and I, and we had our first daughter. And so we didn't really want to go to school again as a student. We wanted to get a paycheck, even though it wasn't very big. We wanted just to start our lives. And, after I realized that this is really what I wanted to do and that I really enjoyed it and was passionate about it, then we made steps to try to, moved from Fillmore and ended up in St. George, and then I ended up at Dixie College, and then Coach Cleveland asked me to come work for him here, and that's how it kind of all worked. So I've been an Interstate 15 guy, you know.
you don't like to stray too far from I-15.
Yeah, stay close to Interstate 15.
If it wasn't going to be coaching, and maybe it was always going to be coaching, is there another life that you could have seen you living? Or another career path?
Well, I was in the business school at the University of Houston, and you know, my dad worked in the city of Houston downtown every day, and in that grind. And I interned at One Shell Plaza with Shell Oil Company one summer. My brother graduated from here at BYU with an accounting degree. My sister. You know, she was a financial planner. And so that was kind of my path, was to be into, you know, be a downtown guy and work every day and, you know, answer the bell at 8 a.m. and, you know, then be released at 5. And after doing that for a summer, I just really had a hard time seeing myself in that role my entire life. And, you know, when I married Cheryl, and that was what we were on the path to do. And that was one of the kind of the scariest things I had to do in my life, was to explain to her that I really didn't want to be a financial downtown business guy, that I wanted to coach. And I was very, very fortunate that she was supportive and had been supportive all the way through.
Okay, so you mentioned Houston several times, and we're obviously going to get into your playing career with the University of Houston, but you're from that area. So tell us about your family dynamic growing up. What was life like for you growing up?
Well, I was born in Southern California, and we lived there until I was about eighth grade. Then my dad relocated and got a job in Houston, and so we all moved. And that was tough for me. I mean, that's not the most ideal time to move after raising kids and having grandkids and knowing that, you know, when you up move those kids, they're pretty entrenched.
It's when I moved, and it was horrible.
In their life. And so I moved my freshman year, and I'd been established as a pretty successful athlete at the age of eighth grade, if that's possible. But I was a baseball player and a basketball player, and the coaches all knew me, and you know, the high school coaches were wondering, you know, when I'd be, what camps and everything I was going to be in, and then when I told them we were moving, then you just have to start all over again. And so, anyways, we get to Houston, and I was really nervous about trying to play two sports because I just wanted to make the team in one sport for sure, you know, because I couldn't see myself, you know, not making the team, and if I spread myself too thin, so I didn't know. So anyways, my freshman year, I just played basketball, and then when I kind of got my feet set, my sophomore year, I played baseball, and so I played baseball and basketball in high school.
Let's focus on the basketball side of it. How good of a basketball player were you in high school?
Well, I thought I was really good, as most 15, 16, 17-year-old kids think.
We know where you ended up out of high school. You ended up at Dixie State. What was your recruitment like?
Well, I was my high school coach was about two or three years out of playing for the University of Texas. Mm-hmm. He was a Longhorn, and he got that job from as a player at Texas straight to my high school, and so he was helping me in the Southwest Conference, you know, to get feelers out and things. But the most of the interest that I had was from the smaller schools that weren't at like at, right now you think of Southwest Texas State and all the schools that Utah Tech are actually playing now, you know.
Right.
Those were the schools in Texas that kind of recruited me. But I ended up I really wanted to get to a basketball city or a basketball state. I played basketball in Texas in football country, and we were kind of second-class citizens, and we didn't get the love that, you know, all the football players got. And so when I ended up making my decision for college, I chose Dixie because I wanted to play at the University of Utah, where that's my mom and dad went to school. And I had a friend of mine, Richie Keval, who played at Springwoods, who went to Utah and at BYU and Utah State. Those were the places that I had my eye on because of the crowd, the fan support that they had. And so I ended up at Dixie and played there for a year, and then I went on a mission. I went to England for a couple of years, came back, had a new coach. Neil Roberts was our coach at the time, and played my sophomore year, and then ended up being recruited and going back to play at Houston.
Let's go back to your mission. As you mentioned, you went to England, Manchester. Is that correct? That was the mission. Where do you put that decision to go on a mission in terms of decisions that had meaningful impact in your life now that you look back on it?
Probably was one of the top few that I made, besides who I married. That's probably the most important thing. But it was a tough one for me because I was such a, I did a lot of things and I put up with a lot of things, but all I really wanted to do was to play sports. And at that time, in the church, you know, we were all encouraged to go, and but there weren't a lot of guys, really returned missionaries, that were really successful athletically. And because you take those 2 years off, and it was really tough. And so I made a deal. I knew I was going to Dixie, and I didn't know if I was going on a mission or not, but I made the trek out there, and I ended up playing baseball at Dixie my freshman year. And the deal was, okay, if I have a really good, successful year in basketball and baseball, or both, or either, that's a sign that I should stay home and pursue my life through sports instead of maybe as a missionary. And as it turned out, I had a pretty good freshman year. I was all league, had a pretty good baseball league. I was a baseball year. I was all league, and I ended up going on a mission. So none of the plans actually worked out the way I thought they were going.
Not the way you had originally intended. All yeah. right. So you had mentioned when you came home from your mission, you ultimately heard from Houston and you ended up landing at Houston. We are going to get to that story in Phi Slamma Jamma when we come back. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest today, the great Dave Rose, former BYU head basketball coach, having a great conversation. And before the break, we were talking about you coming home from your mission, and ultimately your former hometown school comes calling. And boy, did you end up landing on an unbelievable team. First off, how did Houston get back in the picture after your mission?
Well, that was quite an interesting story too, in itself. But I actually got to Houston at a very good time. but when I was finishing my sophomore year at Dixie, I was having a great year in baseball, and I was being recruited pretty actively by some schools out here to come play baseball. But there are two things with baseball. One was I didn't really enjoy it as much as I enjoyed basketball. I liked it, and it was fun for me. But basketball just it really motivated me. And the second thing was the basketball scholarships were way better than the baseball scholarships. And my dad had really, you know, kind of taught me to be financially responsible. I learned to disobey him there, you know, just a few years later, and, you know, spend most of my life irresponsibly as far as finances are concerned. But at that point, it was a money issue. And so I got you know, a couple offers to play baseball, but I thought I was going to go to Southern Utah in Cedar City and play baseball and basketball just like I did at Dixie, but just kind of a fluke thing. The University of Houston, they came back from spring break and they had one of their shooting guards was a kid from. He's from overseas somewhere, and he ended up signing a professional contract there. And so it was late in the spring, and Coach Lewis had a scholarship, and he knew of me, you know, because he kind of recruited me, didn't offer me, but he kind of recruited me out of high school. And my high school coach got a hold of him. He ended up calling me, and you know, the rest is kind of history. He ended up offering me on the phone. He said, hey, do you want to come on a visit? And I said, well, I've been to the university 100 times. I used to live right there. And I had a good job. It was a summer job. And I was getting married in June. And so, you know, I said, if you're ready to do this, I can sign the papers and we can get it done. And that's kind of how it happened.
And then you end up on one of the best college basketball teams of all time. And look, there aren't many teams that have nicknames for the group, and you end up on Phi Slamma Jamma, not just end up on it. You're a co-captain on this Houston Cougar team that has Hall of Famers, Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler. How aware were you at the time of what you were a part of?
Not very aware. We were, it's hard to believe this, but we were just a bunch of guys trying to be a team and win games. And what I remember the most when I first got to Houston was how competitive the group of guys were, and to a fault, I thought that, my gosh, these guys, there's almost a fight every day just in pickup games, you know, that, and our team wasn't really established. You know, we had Rob Williams, who was he ended up being drafted by the Nuggets the next year, and so we knew he was going to be a really good player, but Clyde hadn't, you know, established himself at all. And Hakeem, you know, was a guy who came later. And so we were just young guys. Larry Mishaw was in the mix, and we were all just beating each other up, you know, trying to find our spot in this group of really talented group of guys. But we didn't have any idea the first year or two how good we were going to be, and that we'd end up, you know, winning 30-some-odd game and, you know, run the Southwest Conference, won 16-0 in the league, and win the league. And I mean, we really, I think, surprised ourselves.
Well, and you obviously make it to the national championship game in 83. Unfortunately for you guys, you lose to NC State. How did you cope with that loss? How devastating was that? Or did you look at it that way?
Yeah, for me, it was hard, really difficult. Probably one of the toughest losses. I didn't realize I was going to have another 600 or 700, you know, games to be played that I could lose, you know, throughout my career. But it was really tough. But what really I noticed is just how tough it was on my teammates and the guys that I just had such a bond with.
You had already mentioned, so after Houston, you decide to get into the coaching ranks. You start out in the high school ranks in the state of Utah. Ultimately, you head back to St. George. You're an assistant coach at Dixie, obviously now Utah Tech, eventually promoted to head coach. Then in 1997, you get a call from a guy called Steve Cleveland, and he hires you as an assistant coach here at BYU. And those were some difficult times in the BYU basketball program. Take us through that rebuilding process and how difficult it really was during those times.
Maybe the biggest challenge as far as living the challenge. I've felt challenges like that before. But actually trying to live it, because it took us a while to get that thing going. And I remember when Steve first called me. I mean, I'm the coach at Dixie, and we have really good teams, and you know, we're winning 25, 27, 30 games there. And he's talking to me about other guys that he could kind of try to entice to come be a coach there at BYU. And the first two or three telephone conversations, we were just talking about other people. Mm-hmm. And then on the third or fourth conversation, he said, "Dave, I think I've figured out what I want to do." I said, "Great, good for you." He said, "Yeah, I need to hire you as my assistant coach." And I said, "Steve, I don't think that's going to happen. First of all, my wife was from St. George. She was so happy to be back in St. George. I didn't think at all that she would be interested." But anyways, long story short, it worked out, and Steve was one of the best things that happened to me, to us, in our lives and my career, because he was a guy who he understood this game I understood it kind of the way that he understood it, but he lived it, and he really showed me how to kind of be a coach and a kind of responsible person at the same time. I was more of just a really one-sided guy, and that was just everything was about the game, and everything was about, you know, preparing for the game, recruiting the game, practicing the game, winning the game. You know, that was the game, was the whole thing to me. And Cleve kind of really, you know, helped me, to balance it out. And the 8 years that I spent with him here at BYU, We learned how to get beat, but we also learned how to win championships. Yeah. And so I think I got an unbelievable head start into my coaching career and having a chance to be successful at BYU as a head coach because of those 8 years I spent with Cleve.
Well, as we know, Coach Cleveland decided to leave in 2005, and you obviously ended up getting the job. But when you accepted the assistant coaching job, was there ever anything in your mind, whether it was a prompting, anything that was on your radar that maybe it was even possible that one day you would be the head coach at BYU? Did that ever enter your mind at all?
Not until he left. I mean, because I had actually gone and kind of interviewed for three other jobs when I was in those 8 years that I was an assistant, and it was always another assistant's job, mm-hmm. and I ended up staying here with Cleve for one reason or another, for each of those different guys that had offered me those positions. And each one is a story in itself that just really, even to this day, surprises me that I ended up staying at BYU. But that's what ended up happening. And then later, after I got the job and started making it work, I was so happy that I did, and then kind of maybe knew why I did, because that's what I was preparing for, something that I really, really wanted, which was a head Division I basketball job. I just had no idea that it was going to be right here where I was working.
So when he leaves, you don't immediately think, "Oh, I have a real shot here."
I talked to Cleve. The first thing we talked about was me coming to work for him.
Oh.
And I mean, I told him that, "Hey, I'm going to try to see what they're thinking and see what you know, might happen for me here, but I just kind of want to know if things don't work out here, what are my chances of coming and working for you?" And so we had that figured out too. So,
well, and that was such a a strange time in athletics here at BYU anyway, because not only is the basketball team going through a coaching change, the football team is going through a coaching change. It happened the exact same year. You and Bronco Mendenhall take over the reins of football and basketball. Yeah, brand new. That's right. It's so take us all back to that time and just how in flux everything really was.
It was, and I, it's a 1 hour story in itself, you know, those few days. President Samuelson was the president at the time, and he had turned the search process over to Tom, and Tom was in the process of trying to figure out what he was going to do. We had a, he called me, asked me to come to a undisclosed spot here in town, and we had a I didn't realize that you know, but after being the coach here, you know, for 14 years, I realized, well, there's a lot of people trying to figure out what he was doing, you know, and he wanted to keep it, you know, kind of secret. And so anyways, it was just a private process, and after speaking with Tom and realizing that Tom was excited about the prospects of me being the coach, obviously I told him I was really interested in doing it. And then I talked with President Samuelson, and we went through a long conversation. And he said, you know, Coach, I'd love to have you be the coach here at BYU, but that's not my call. I got some work to do here and see if we can make this happen. And so just sit tight. And those were tough days, you know, because what I wanted to do more than anything was keep that class together, especially with Lee Kamard. I mean, Lee was my guy, and we had recruited him, and he had so many people interested in him. And you know, I wanted to be able to commit to him that, you know, we wanted you, and you still wanted to come. And so I actually got on a plane and flew to Arizona. And I wasn't the head coach, and I didn't know if – I knew that was the direction that we would like it to go. But anyways, so that was an interesting conversation and how that happened and went through that process. But anyways, long story short, we got to a Monday morning, and then I got the call. And the Monday, President Samuelson said, hey – we want you to be the coach. Do you want to be the coach? I said, yes. He said, okay, we'll have a press conference. I said, when? He said, we're going to do it today.
No time to waste.
And so it kind of reminded me of watching what just happened here.
Yeah.
When they're ready to go and they got all the ducks lined up, it can happen pretty quick. And I was just excited for it to happen for me.
Well, and you obviously had been a part of the staff, and you had just mentioned, you know, how important it was to try and keep the core of this group together. And it paid off, because in your first year, you win 20 games. Based off of your expectations of what you wanted, how did it play out?
Well, that was really tough. Well, I mean, I wanted to make the NCAA tournament. That's what you want to do every year. It's just a huge goal of yours, and we got late into the season, and it was a possibility of actually happening. We're just, you know, right on the edge of if we could win a few more games. Anyways, and the way it worked out, we got beat the first round of the conference tournament when we were going to Denver to play the tournaments over there, and really disappointed. Then we got an NIT bid, and so we were excited to have that. But after a couple weeks, all right, and you go back into recruiting and you're getting right into the putting your team together for the second time, you know, you realize that that was a successful year. We won 20 games, and that's a good way to start. But I don't want this feeling, you know, every year where we something good almost happened. And so we really went to work, and I had great staff, and, you know, We got really fortunate with some of the players that we were able to sign. And then, you know, I felt like the next 5 or 6 years, we just made tremendous strides in our ability to be able to attract the top LDS talent. And we really had a kind of a focus on some junior college guys to fill in a couple spots here and there. And then being able to get them – get that pipeline started where you get them on their missions and you get them back home and you're playing with an older, experienced team. And that's kind of your advantage at BYU, at least it was at that time.
I think from a fan standpoint, the 2011 season probably will be the most remembered because of Jimmer and everything involved with Jimmer and the run in the NCAA tournament. You obviously have, you know, situations where you're beating Gonzaga, big games against the Zags. You have the unbelievable battles with San Diego State and Kawhi Leonard. Are those the moments you remember, or are your memories when you look back during your time at BYU completely different from, say, individual games?
Yeah, my memories of BYU are way more focused on the individual players and the relationship that I had with those guys and watching them come in like they did with just so naive. They think they know everything and they're on top of it all, and then they realize after the first year how different this is from high school, and their commitment level and their work habits and how that all needs to increase. And it happened with every one of the players, and to one degree or another. And when you think of the really high-end, talented, you know, top-end players that I had over my career, you know, so much credit goes to my assistant coaches to be able to so much work to recruit them, to identify them, to recruit them, to get them here, then to put them in a position that is going to make them really successful. Like you look at Jimmer, for example. I mean, after 5 or 6 months of Jimmer being here, we were having discussions every day if he was going to be a point guard or if he was going to be a score shooting guard. And then we finally figured out that he's a scoring point guard. And then it worked out really well.
Yeah.
You know, but trying to figure that out, it not only takes time for the coach and the coaching staff, but for the player himself, what his niche is going to be a really successful Division I players in a really competitive league. And so for me, I mean, I love talking to people and reminiscing about some of those individual games. I don't remember a lot about a lot of them. I remember the end, and I remember the score. I remember how I felt. The wins are never quite as high. You don't remember them as you do those losses. Those losses were pretty tough at times. But we had our share of really good times. That's for sure.
How often is the sport coat throw brought up to you?
that is the most. I think I'm the most famous for that. The fact that my youngest daughter Taylor, at the time she was a student here at BYU, or I don't think at the time she was. I think she was still in high school, but. But that was when that whole trending and the Twitter thing and was starting. And,
yeah.
And when she told me that, Dad, I'm so proud of you, you know. And so, well, what's that? Well, you were, whatever you call it, trending. Or
yeah, you're trending on social media.
On social media.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday night. And that's why I realize now, well, no wonder I was. It wasn't the weekend. Everybody wasn't playing. I mean, it's only a few games,
yeah.
You know, in the conference tournament. But I got that coat off pretty quick. And I got the tee for it, too. I feel good that I got the tee. I mean, if I'd have got all that notoriety for the getting my coat off that quick, I should at least get some kind of props for it.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
Can you articulate from your perspective what that senior season of Jimmer's was like to be a part of and to watch how many people had eyes on certainly him, obviously, but this program as well?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever really know the magnitude of what that team was able to accomplish for BYU, but in BYU basketball. But you talk about putting a group of guys and a school, university, our conference, on the national map. I mean, the fact that we had Jimmer and Kawhi Leonard in the same conference going after each other, and we played three times, and two of the games were awesome. One of the games, not so much. For Jimmer and I to go around after the season was over and collect these Players of the Year awards, you know, three or four, five different places, and to hear the stories from that area, small schools in Kentucky starting their morning announcement on Monday with the Jimmer Watch, you know, and a school of 400 or 500 kids. And what was the most important thing on Monday morning was to talk about Jimmer's games that weekend.
Well, one of the things that I know people really respond to you about while you're going through your coaching career and you're picking up all these accolades and racking up all these wins, you're also dealing with a lot of challenges at the time with your health. And you were dealing with a cancer diagnosis. And I want to ask you, before we go back to that, I want to know, how are you today? Where do things stand today with this?
Well, I'm here, and I'm upright, so that's good. You know, it's kind of amazing, but I think it's June. Do you see the June 5th or 6th will be my 15th year anniversary of when I was on the plane going from Orange County back to Vegas, is when I had the episode and ended up in the hospital, and they removed the mass and kind of the rest kind of history. But so for 15 years now, I've been dealing with this neuroendocrine tumor, and I've had many, many procedures, and I've had a lot of operations, and but I was able to coach for another 10 years, mm-hmm. and I was really fortunate, because I didn't know if I was going to be able to do that. I was so discouraged in my mind. I mean, obviously, I'm fighting this thing, don't really know what it is, but in my mind, I'm just thinking, how in the world can this happen to me, that I worked my whole life to get to this position, and I've coached 3 or 4 years and still haven't won an NCAA tournament game. We've been there a few times, but it's all going to go away, and I'm not going to get to coach anymore. I just can't. I can't come to grips with, you know, what am I supposed to learn from this? Okay, what is this supposed to teach me? And then, the way it worked out is, I couldn't have written it any better. It was great. We had 10 terrific years with terrific teams, great coaches, coaches' families. I mean, I just had a wonderful kind of miracle ride, with a really tough diagnosis. Yeah. Trying to keep it quiet as much as possible. But, you know, trying to manage that was quite interesting. I think it'd be much, much more difficult now people can take pictures of anything. I mean, walking into the hospital, I mean, all the stuff that people were trying to figure out what was going on, and I could actually keep it kind of quiet back then. Made it all the way to 2019 till I had to call it quits.
Well, how much of a respite was basketball for you while you're going through this, just if for no other reason than to have something else to think about and focus on?
The greatest thing about it was that I was so locked in on my team and this game and our staff and trying to make that function every day, and the energy and the focus and the time that takes. I didn't have much time to worry about this cancer diagnosis thing, and I had the scans every 6 months, and so when I got to that week where I was going to have the next scan, things got a little bit nerve wracking for me. I got distracted, and I just wanted to get it over with to find out what's going on. And for the first, you know, 8 or 9 scans, it was pretty good. You know, I went for 4.5 years before anything really jumped back in. But then when it did, it became a pretty common thing. And what I've learned over the 15 years is that if I could get through this process maybe a year or two, say 2 years, the next process is going to be maybe 18 months until it returns. Then the next fraud is going to be 12 months before it returns. It shortens every yeah. time. And for me to make it to 15 years right now, that's why I talk about it, because it is that when I first found my diagnosis and then what my prognosis was, I've outlived that, so I'm in good shape.
There
right
you
now.
Go. There you go. So with basketball playing such a pivotal role in almost your entire life, how hard was it to say goodbye to basketball then in 2019?
Wow, that was a tough time, but it was so exciting, such an exciting time for me because I knew that it was time, and I knew that I probably got 3 or 4 more years than the doctors actually really wanted me to do. I had two different guys at different times look me right in the eye and say, "Dave, how long do you think you're planning on doing this?" You know, and I said forever the first time, and the second time, with a little help from him, I said, "Well, I think it'll happen eventually, but I want to coach as long as I feel as excited to get the next team started as I did the last team started." And when I got to the point where it wasn't so excited anymore, that then I'd make a move. And I was lucky that it happened the way it did and when it did. And obviously, for some reason, I didn't know why I was feeling the way I was feeling and how come I was so fatigued at times. But 6 months later, I had a massive heart attack and realized that maybe that was some of the issues that I was feeling, you know. And then a year later, I got COVID and I had a stroke. And, you know, so I had a lot of things happen to me that if I was still the coach, I wouldn't have been able to coach anyways. So.
You obviously are a BYU legend. And so my last question to you is, what do you want your legacy to be?
My legacy, I want, you know, people to know how much I cared about this place. I love BYU. I had a chance, quite a few chances to leave and go coach somewhere else. But I love the university. I love the mission of the university. I didn't have a chance to go to school here. And so, I was very fortunate to be able to work here for 20 some odd years. But, I really, really want my players that played here for us to know how much I appreciate the commitment and the dedication that they gave to our program, because we were successful and we won a lot of games, but nothing is more successful than the lives that these guys are living today and the example that they're setting for the next group of athletes that come through here. And I'm just so proud of the guys that played for us and what they're doing and how they're living the dream for them. And Cheryl and I the other night were kind of going through and trying to count how many different foundations have been started in our players' names. And you know, all the commitments of things that these guys do for good in their communities. It all started right here. And the example that was set by the people here on campus, and they get a chance now to go out and live it.
Well, I know BYU fans appreciate everything that you have done for this university and for the BYU basketball program. Personally, I certainly appreciate you being willing to do this, but throughout my career, you and your wife, you've always been very nice to me. I've always appreciated that. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes. I really enjoyed this, so thank you.
Well, you're easy to be nice to. Well, I can't say that about all the media guys, but, you're easy to be nice to, and we had a nice run here. I loved every minute of it.
Well, Dave, thank you so much, and good luck in the future. Thanks again for doing
this. All right, thanks a lot, Jason.
All right, thanks again to my guest, Dave Rose. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcasts platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.